everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 301. I feel like it's the start of a whole new era. Amazing stuff. As always, this stuff remains the same. If you want to get in touch with us, drop us a line. Send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Whatever you want to write, we respond to every single email, so just send it on over there. Follow us on Twitter. The handle is, of course, This Show Is So Gay. You can stroll on over to our website. That is thisshowissogay.com. And you can listen to all of our past shows. Every single episode we've ever done is up there on thisshowissogay.com. And go to the Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay. Like us, because we sure as heck like you. What a fun show we have for you this week with one of our favorite guests of all time. Daniel Gray is an electro-pop musician. He's a singer-songwriter. He's a funny man. He's a total troublemaker. Trust me on that one. He is a nightlife personality. He is one of the funniest Facebook posters I know, and he is just a performer living there on the edge. He is making his fifth appearance on our show, but his first in well over a year. Daniel Gray, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Hi, Ken. How are you?
I love having you on the show.
I love being on the show.
We have so much ground to cover. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Now, I have only said this about one other guest in the history of the show, but I would say that this applies to you. When I think of Daniel Gray, I think that you're just like a total, and gosh, I think this is going to come out wrong, you're a total hustler. Like, you are out there, you are making your own waves, you are making things happen. Is that accurate?
Oh, that is accurate. I'm a hustler in every sense of the word. Some days I'm on the street corner. It's all fun. But that's all fine. I like doing it.
What are you charging these days?
Oh, it all depends on what's happening, how tired I am, how long I got to be on my knees for it. All depends,
okay. Family-friendly show here on episode number 301. But you really do, right? Like, you are one of those people who it strikes me that if there's not something going on, you're going to make it happen.
Yes. I like to work.
Yeah.
I think working is fun. And I have ADD, so not one thing keeps my attention all the time, so I have to, you know, do everything. I like doing everything.
You like doing everything.
I think that I'm very, very talented at everything, so why not just try it?
I love it. Now, I gotta tell you, you know the only other guest that I've described in such a way?
I don't know. Who is it?
Robin Camille.
Oh! That is my partner in crime, Miss Robin Camille.
I know. I think you get some of it from her. I think she gets some of it from you.
I will say that I steal everything from Robin Camille.
Nice.
I think that Robin is an inspiration for everyone. And whatever she tries to do, I try to do, and I steal it all from Miss Camille. Thank
nice.
You, Miss Camille.
Nice.
I love you.
I've tried to steal her look, but I can't pull it off. I even tried to steal her video about that whale that we wanted to free, but it didn't work for me. She did it very well. Free Lolita, exactly.
Yes. It's Robin Camille, who I love. Everyone loves Robin Camille. I wish I was as likable as Robin Camille.
You are.
I loved her.
You are. Do you have the sense that you are not likable?
I have the sense that I'm a troublemaker.
I know.
Which is fun for me.
I know.
I like being a troublemaker.
You are out there in troublemaking there in the New York City area, which we're going to talk about. Before we even talk about your specific projects, let's like back up to the step of what are you trying to do? What do you think is the narrative thread? Because you have all these different projects, and we're going to hit on some of them. But what do you think is the overall narrative thread that says, well, this is what I, Daniel Gray, am trying to do out there?
I think that my narrative thread is random chaos.
Nice.
And that is what I try to bring to the world. I think that there are too many regimented things. I think too many people try to stay as on a straight path as possible. I like a little bit of chaos in my world. I like not knowing what's happening in the future. So I try to throw a little bit of a wrench in there whenever I can.
I would imagine you get some resistance to that style.
I think in the beginning I did.
Okay.
But now everyone is just like, that's just Daniel.
That's just Daniel.
That's just let him do what he's going to do.
Well, let's look back at some highlights. I mean, you're only like, what, 18 at this point? You're quite young, quite young. Maybe a little bit older, but that's fine. It's fine. Talk to me about some highlights. What are some of your professional highlights that in performing that you look back and say, oh my gosh, look at what I did there?
Well, of course, I loved when my first album came out, Invictus, and I was on Logo Television. I was so excited to see my music video actually on television. So, of course, you have to say that, because that's what started everything.
Yeah.
And then, of course, doing shows with Robin Camille. Working with Robin is always a highlight. We took over Atlantic City and caused a lot of trouble in Atlantic City, and that was fun.
I've never been to Atlantic City.
Oh, you have to come.
You have
to come with me and Robin and everyone. We'll visit every place. We'll show you Miss Tanae, who is a legend in Atlantic City. She is just the greatest. If you don't know Miss Tanae, Facebook the real Miss Tanae.
Looking her up.
She's
looking her up. Okay.
She's always, always a good time. And of course, the first time I was on This Show Is So Gay. that is always a great time. I love being on this show.
Oh boy. We gotta get you loftier goals. Well, let's go back to Robin. Let's go back. Yeah, because the first two were good. The third one was a bit of a stretch, but I'll take it, because it's episode 301 and I'll take it. But I would imagine, so this is kind of a fun part. Let's get to the nitty gritty of it. This is what happens, by the way, when you're on the show for the fifth time, is that we ask you more probing questions. I would imagine that you're a strong personality and Robin is a strong personality. When you guys co-host together, how do you navigate that? Because you guys are both such consummate entertainers, and so to have two of you up there at the same time, how do you work through that?
Oh, it's not – the reason that Robin and I work together so well is because it's not an issue. There's never been a problem with us working together. She's such a professional, and I'm such a professional.
Yeah.
We already know where the other one's sort of going, so we work so well together. Our chemistry is amazing, which I feel everyone has good chemistry with Robin Camille, and if you don't, there's something wrong with you.
Right. Yeah.
But we've worked together so often, and we sort of have a groove and a rhythm, and I know when to let Miss Camille do her thing, and she knows when to let me do my thing, and we both compliment each other very well on stage. So it's not even a dialogue that has to happen.
Yeah.
It just sort of happens, which is when you know that you're really working with someone who's in total sync with you. I love working with Robin.
I love it. Now, let's do the flip side, because we got to cover when we have our listeners thinking, well, how can I break into these different businesses? We don't want to just sugarcoat everything. What about one of those instances where you got up on stage or some sort of performance and it didn't go exactly how you wanted it to go?
Oh, my gosh. Take a time. I have bombed so many times, especially in the beginning of doing nightlife and things. What is a specific time I bombed? Okay, I won't say that this is a generalization, but in my experience, it was my first time doing comedy. I sort of got thrown into it. I was the musical guest for a Movember show, and the host didn't show up. And me, I said, I can do it. Why not? No, that was a wrong thing to do. I thought that all I had to do was, I tried to channel my inner Joan Rivers / Kathy Griffin.
Okay.
And it did not work for me. The suit and tie crowd, they might have liked my music. They were not having my mouth.
Wow.
They could not take it. So one thing I will say is always play for your audience or know who your audience is. But me being a troublemaker, I had a great time, and when I'm bombing, I have changed it up, because in the beginning, when I would bomb, I would get nervous, I would get upset, I'd be like, what's going on? Now, I just don't care, and I sort of do the show for myself, and I find when you're doing the show and you're having fun, other people will have fun with you.
Nice.
At least some people, I'm not going to say everybody, but some people will. I try to go by the people that are drinking. If they're having fun, I'm having fun.
I love it. Not that you've ever had a drink before you've gone on stage.
Never.
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 Okay. I get worried. What does that even mean, by the way, that the suit and tie crowd weren't having it? Were they just dead silent?
Oh, yes. They were looking at me like, who is this little brown boy? And why is he saying these things? This is No. Shut up and sing your song. Sing your sad song and then go away. But I just had to keep it moving because I volunteered to do it because the host didn't show up.
Right.
And they did, yes, they were just like staring daggers at me. And when we were leaving, like when they were leaving, they were saying bye to the other entertainers. And then this one lady was like, your song was good. And then just sort of walked away. I was like, oh, shade. I feel all the shade.
I love it. Well, when people hear this episode, this will have already have happened, but you're going to host the Laugh Out Loud Night of Comedy.
Yes. Yes. Laugh Out Loud, I host it every Wednesday in Philadelphia at Tavern on Comac. And it's just an open mic night. So there can be like 20 comedians. There can be 5 comedians. There can be just me and my friend Tony. But it's always a good time because we play games, we give out prizes, we give out drinks, we tell jokes. I bash my ex so hard in the show.
It's wait a second. You do?
All the time.
Okay.
It's the greatest material ever. Like, I was about to call my next album Bitter and Beautiful.
Nice.
Because I'm so bitter. But I can't be that bitter because it gave me so much good material.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, one of the reasons I love having you on the show, we established this with your last appearance, is that you're our pop culture correspondent. So I get to throw random things out at you, and then you get to give me your take on them. You ready?
Let's do it.
So how do we feel about NBC announcing that its next live musical is going to be The Wiz?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Seeing that we all know how I felt about The Sound of Music, I thought it was great, except for that little Liesl girl. I did not like her. Peter Pan was a hot mess. Christopher Walken saved that live show just because he's Christopher Walken. I think that this, The Wiz, one, I love The Wiz.
Okay.
But they really need to cast well because it's Diana Ross and Michael Jackson.
Right.
Like, there's no one around right now that reminds me of Diana Ross and Michael Jackson. I think that if we're just going to go for broke, I say we cast Selena Gomez and Justin Bieber and let them go for broke and just make it the biggest train wreck that NBC has ever seen.
Wow. You know, my theory, which a lot of people share online, I think it's going to be Bruno Mars in the Michael Jackson spot.
Bruno Mars? Oh, see, that would be good. But is he an actor? Can he act?
He was on Saturday Night Live, and he was pretty funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, that's if they're trying to go for the serious role play, though. I just say go for broke, make
go
bad,
broke.
And just cast. So everyone loved the train wreck. Everyone. No one hates a train wreck. We still talk about Glitter. It's the one thing
we
I
do.
Hear people talk about with Mariah Carey all the time. Everyone loves a train wreck. It's why we love Miley Cyrus.
I've never seen Glitter.
You've never seen Glitter? Your gay card's been revoked. You can't have it anymore.
I just said we're starting a whole new era on this show is so gay, and I've never seen Glitter, and I just got my gay card taken away.
You have to see Glitter. That's
okay.
Your homework.
All right, I'm on it. That's The Wiz. All right, next topic. Now, I just watched this for the first time yesterday. How do we feel? And you just referenced Justin Bieber, so this is Bieber adjacent, but I just, for the first time, watched Martha Stewart at the Justin Bieber roast.
Martha Stewart should be on every roast, every single roast. She destroyed him in that roast. She destroyed everyone. Like, if I was a comedian at that roast, I would be embarrassed that Martha Stewart just upstaged the whole game. She, you know, because we all met Martha. She was, like, buttoned up and, like, nice. You could tell she was sort of a but she didn't really want to be a like, she, now Martha is, what is she, 75?
70, I think like 71, yeah.
Yes, she's pulling out that old lady senior citizen, I don't give a what card. She will say whatever she wants, she will do whatever she wants. Wasn't she just on the cover of a magazine talking about how she's like banging 20-year-olds every day? Like, I love new Martha Stewart. I love ratchet Martha. I think she's the greatest. I thought she had the best set on the roast. If I was Jeffrey Ross, I'd be scared that they would take my Roastmaster General card away. because she destroyed it.
And she went in. Let's be very clear. She went in. She did not shy away from, shall we say, some racial topics.
No, that was my favorite joke she told. African American rich. That cracked me up. I fell off my chair. I couldn't believe she said it. It was amazing.
So people,
it was amazing.
People should go and listen to Martha Stewart. That clip is all over online. It is something. It is something. All right, so let's leave Martha Stewart behind. Next topic. Now, this is kind of an interesting decision that I have made with this season. It is my impression that you are watching this season of RuPaul's Drag Race. Are you not?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Now, Daniel Gray, I have made the decision to watch the episodes but not watch any of the episodes of Untucked. I have not seen any of the Untucked. And for our listeners who don't watch RuPaul's Drag Race, Untucked is available online. It's a 20-minute kind of during the show while the judges are deliberating where usually the drag queens go at each other during this very entertaining drag show.
It's behind the scenes. But now it used to be after the show, and now it's on YouTube.
I am not watching it. Am I missing something by not watching it?
I have two thoughts about Untucked, new Untucked.
Yes.
One, I feel we're going to start with the positive.
Okay, good.
With something positive.
Good.
One, I feel like it's less staged and less scripted now. I feel like this is what actually happens backstage. Like, sit down, have a drink, talk amongst yourselves. Rue's going to go get her face done, and then we'll be back. So I feel like it's less scripted now, which I like. I like that it actually puts the real in reality television. And that was the nice thing I could say.
Okay.
That's the nice thing I could say. I just feel like I watch it now, and I feel like it's cheaper, that maybe Logo gave either took away Rue's budget or gave her a raise, and she was like, well, I'm just going to keep this. Forget the Interior Illusions Lounge and just put it on the internet. It looks cheaper to me. It looks so much cheaper. And I'm very impressed with many of the queens this year.
A lot of people are feeling like this is not a dynamic group.
It's not. They're sort of boring.
Yeah.
Like, no offense. If I work with any of you, do not take this personally. But I feel like last year's group was such, like, there were so many characters.
Right.
That the bar was set so high, I maybe feel like maybe none of the queens, no matter who you cast, they weren't going to live up to a Bianca Del Rio.
Right.
LaGanja.
Right.
Who no one liked, but we can't forget. She was amazing.
Yeah.
She was great ratchet television. I think that there was too much hype with this season, because all I kept hearing about before the season started was Miss Fame, and I'm watching her on the show like, do something. There's a handful I like.
For folks who don't watch, Miss Fame on this week's episode did a whole rant about chickens and how she loves chickens and she talks to chickens and she's got tattoos of chickens. I'm thinking, wow, this is really boring.
That is the highlight of the episode.
Yes.
And I think that she's getting rid of the wrong people. I think that she's picking all the wrong people to eliminate.
Yeah.
I will say, the one queen there were two queens I liked a lot. I love Ginger Minj.
I do too. I do too.
I feel like, though, if she was on any other season, she would be a throwaway.
Right.
Like, forgettable.
Right.
But I do like her. I like her. I think this is a great season for her to be on. I think that this year is a year for the big girls. And I love Trixie. I thought Trixie was great.
Yeah.
And then she got rid of Trixie.
I
appreciated the clown makeup. I appreciate clown realness.
Yeah.
I think that it's great. So, yeah, I'm not excited about this year's season of Drag Race. But if you do want to come and not be bored, I host a Drag Race viewing party in Philadelphia also.
I had no idea.
Yes. Every Monday at Boxers in Philly.
Okay. All right, so that's Drag Race. Now, I did watch the first episode, but I have not seen any subsequent episodes. It is my impression you are a fan of Empire.
Okay. I love Empire. And I did not expect to love Empire because I don't like Terrence Howard. But if you're not watching Empire, you're missing something. You're missing out on a movement in America.
Ooh, wow.
I think that Empire is Glee on steroids. It's amazing. It's like a musical Scandal. I actually think Olivia Pope should be on Empire. I think they should all do a crossover of Empire, Scandal, and How to Get Away with Murder. Because those three ladies are everything you need on television.
Yeah.
They are yes, they're amazing. You need to watch it. But the fact that you haven't watched it, that gives you a great binge-worthy day.
Oh, Daniel Gray, I have to stop with some of these shows. It's too much for me. It's too much. I have very deliberately not gotten into How to Get Away with Murder because I just, like, I cannot handle another show. I think I'm kind of at capacity right now, and unless I lose Grey's Anatomy, which I can't lose because I think it's a documentary and I think I actually know these doctors, Scandal, I have to tell you, Scandal, it's on the edge for me. It's on the edge. It could fall off my schedule at any point because I'm kind of like, it's just so ridiculous at this point that I don't know that there was a point it wasn't ridiculous, but for some reason I'm acknowledging it now. So that one's on the bubble. That could fall off.
Well,
I cannot take on another show.
The whole kidnapping thing
ruined
Scandal for me. I still like Olivia Pope. I don't feel sorry. I think the problem with Scandal is they're trying to make you feel sorry for Olivia. And I'm like, boo-hoo, the president's calling you.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. Like first world problems. I don't care. So I would say drop Scandal, pick up How to Get Away with Murder if you're going to pick up one.
Okay.
And potentially drop Drag Race and pick up Empire.
All right. Oh, gosh. All right. I got to rearrange my schedule now because I also cannot lose Arrow or Flash because those also are documentaries to me.
Okay, I've never seen either
show. Oh, you want to feel not good about your abs? Watch Arrow, any episode. Just take your pick, listeners. You think you're feeling great about yourself, then you watch Arrow and you think, oh, well, that's an aesthetic I've not yet achieved, so there's that.
That's why I think I watch Scandal, because I like Huck. And
oh,
Huck
gosh.
Is an achievable body for me. Like, I see Huck, and I'm just like, yay, I can get that body. Thank you, Huck.
And Huck, by the way, in real life, a gay man playing this part,
yes,
I love it. I love it. All right, got one more for you. What about this connection that we're all talking about now between Iggy Azalea and Britney Spears?
Oh, my gosh. I'm counting down the days.
Really?
Like, hashtag pretty girls. I'm not a fan of Iggy, but I do like Britney. And I want to hear what she was going to do because I think the last time I spoke to you, I told you, I think she gave, like, she's done. I thought her last CD was her last one. Like, she officially is done. And so I want to hear what, I don't give a you know what Britney sounds like.
Yeah.
Because I really, like, have you seen her show in Vegas?
No, have you?
I have, and she literally walks on stage, like, rolling her eyes, like, what am I doing this for? Like, it's the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Isn't that an expensive ticket?
It is, but see, if you're going to the Britney show, you have to know what you're paying for. You're not paying to hear her sing live.
Right.
You're not paying to watch her, you're just paying to witness the shade that she is throwing the world.
Wow.
Like, it is the greatest shady show I've ever seen. It is, she herself is just a spectacle, and she glows. Like, there are those people in life that just radiate and that just glow, like you do. You radiate, you glow. We all saw that video that you made talking about your bike ride. You were just radiating and glowing, and it was amazing.
Well, thank you.
So, she is, you pay to see the Britney glow and watch her cast shade on the world, because she does. She just throws shade at any and everyone. Don't ask her for a picture. If you want to get a picture, it's going to cost you about $3,000. Don't ask to touch her. She will not touch you.
Okay.
She will just throw shade upon the world. It is the greatest thing. So I just want to hear what I think Britney is like 33, but in her mind, she's like a 6-year-old woman that just doesn't care. She's Martha Stewart now. She's the musical Martha Stewart. just doesn't care anymore.
It's great. It's great. By the way, can we give a shout-out? What lovely pictures online. How about a shout-out to your brother who just got married?
Yes, my little brother got married, and he and his lovely wife, Autumn, just got back from their honeymoon. So, yes, shout-out to you, David.
Nice.
Thank you for – I hope you have a great, great life. Thank you for inviting me to your wedding. You were required to, and I hope we didn't embarrass you that much.
All right. Well, what are you working on? What should we know about? You're hosting comedy nights, which is super fun. What's going on the musical side of Daniel Gray?
Well, I was about to release an album last year, and then I was in this relationship that I never could talk about because my ex never wanted me to talk about my relationship, and then it ended. Then it ended, and now I'm throwing all the shade. So I'm back in the studio, rewriting my album to just throw shade upon his whole situation.
Wow.
It's going to be great.
Okay.
I'm writing a book, and I have a film coming out.
What do you mean? I barely can get to the supermarket, and you're writing a book, and you have a film coming out.
Yes. My book is called Sticks and Stones. It's not what you're called. It's what you answer to.
Nice.
And it's mostly to give people confidence, because I get so tired of seeing the kids and people get so affected by words. I think we're all too sensitive now. I think everyone's too sensitive. And everyone's trying to control the words that come out of other people's mouths. And I don't think you can. I can't, no one's going to tell me what to say. I know that. But I think that you can't, instead of worrying about what so-and-so is saying, you worry about how it affects you and how you're going to take it. Because if you don't let it affect you, if you take the power away, I think that it's, a much easier exercise than trying to control other people. And B, it raises your self-esteem. And C, I think that once you stop letting words bother you, then people will stop trying to throw words out that try to bother people. I think that's the greatest way to affect change. And then my movie is Gay Porn Superstar, which is not anything about self-esteem. It's just a funny, funny comedy that I wrote and produced, starring Robin Camille.
Starring Robin Camille. So when is that coming out?
Well, we are in pre-production, and we are going to be filming this summer. And then that should be out in the fall or winter, hopefully.
You're a hustler, man. You are hustling out there.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, hit me.
You know I listen to your show. You've been ghosted?
Oh, man, I know 3 times in the past year I've been ghosted. For folks who have not heard, you can go back and listen. A couple of weeks ago, we did our interview with Dr. Frankie, who I love having on. And yeah, I've been ghosted where everything's going fine and then they disappear. But then they're there on the social media. And so you can kind of see them. And yeah, no, I've been totally ghosted where, I mean, one of the dudes. So this is just between you and I and, you know, whoever else is listening. One of the dudes I introduced to my parents because he wanted to meet them when they visited Cleveland, and the next week he introduced me to his family, and then the following week he was like, oh, okay, I'm out, for no reason.
What?
There was nothing that had happened. He had been pushing forward the conversation on children. He had been pushing forward, you know, like, oh, my gosh, this is perfect. He's a nice Jewish boy. I'm a nice Jewish boy. And then, yeah, he just totally disappeared. Now, the crazy thing is –
by a Jewish boy?
I know. My people. Yeah. And so the crazy part is I bought a house this past summer, and the dude lives like 6 houses away, and I have not seen him since.
What?
I know.
I'm just going to say that you are way better than me because you have a podcast and you don't call out. Like, I would be throwing shade and blasting. People are lucky that all I have are these nightlife shows and music, because if I had a podcast, it would be on blast every week, every single week on blast. I can't, and you're too nice to be ghosted.
Oh, I'm sure there's a dark side to me somewhere. It's just mostly not on the podcast. No, I know. It was total bummer. So, yeah, that was one ghosting I didn't really care about. It wasn't that big of a deal. That one hurt, and then the other one. I'm just going to tell tales out of school right now. The other one was the night before he was going to move in with me, someone I had been dating who we didn't probably know each other well enough for me to agree to have him move in with me. I make mistakes, listeners. I know it. I know it. And then the night before that he was going to move in, he ghosted out, and he ended up just going to Seattle to be with his ex.
What?
I love that story.
What? And you don't call these people out on blast?
I don't.
Oh.
I will say that one of the most fun things I've ever done, and it was one of those things where I heard myself say it, we had a few months ago, we had Washington State Senator Marco Elias was on the show, and we were talking, he was running for re-election, and we were talking about all the major issues happening in the state of Washington, of which there's many, including the economy and education and civil rights laws and all these great things. And then somehow I heard myself ask him, and folks can go back to the show SoGay.com. Come and hear me ask him, hey, by the way, this guy dumped me and moved to Seattle. Is there anything that you can do to make me feel better about that? And State Senator Marco Elias from Washington State absolutely said that they're going to funnel some of the electrical grid through this guy's house so his electricity bill goes up. And I felt okay about that.
He just won my vote. I never go to Washington. Won my vote.
I love it. I love it.
You don't
love
do that to my Ken.
Well, here's the deal, listeners. Everybody needs to stroll on over to DanielGrayWorld.com. That's G-R-A-Y, DanielGrayWorld.com. You can find him on Facebook. I love having you on the show because I don't often get a chance to just talk pop culture, and I know, especially our listeners in Vermont, one of the things I learned about living in Vermont was that nobody has a TV, and so you have to speak in code, and you have to use safe words if you're talking about TV in mixed company because people look at you funny. You can only talk about NPR. But they're in the New England area, so there are any number of listeners who are like, what were you guys just talking about? But I need episodes like this, Daniel Gray, where we can just gab because we don't get the chance
it's
to watch these shows.
It's all I know, listeners. It's all I know. I just know that, and I just know pop culture, and I know that I'm not going to Indiana anytime soon.
We are going to cover we are going to cover Indiana in the next part of our show. I gave you the pop culture part. Is there anything you would like to say about Indiana before we move to our political part of the next part of the show?
I just say I give Indiana what they give me. No time.
Yeah.
So I have nothing to say about them.
There you go.
So good
there
for you,
go.
Do your thing. Ken, you're amazing. And to all the people that are ghosting Ken, to the three of you, you will now be on blast in my show.
I love
so
it.
I
will give you their names. Off the air, of course, of course, of
off the
course.
Air, of course.
Everybody, DanielGrayWorld.com. Daniel Gray, always a treat having you on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's always a treat to be on.
Some people grow up wanting to be astronauts, flying into other space. I always wanted to do what I want, be a star you can't erase. Some people dream of one house and fancy cars, driving down the highway. I dream of taking everything so far, everyone will scream my name. Come on, come on, be the place to drink that beer. They pass me like by the end, you'll be screaming my name. Every day for the same thing. But all the bad thing I do are for the good of pleasing you. All for no one but me, the favorite king, all for the same thing.
Some people dream they better let it slip away from the fear of success. For that's one.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, first things first, thank you guys so much for your incredible response to last week's 300th episode. It was such an absolute treat to have Jim J. Bullock on the show. I just grew up idolizing him and feeling like, oh, we have this kinship. And then to just circle back around years and years later and actually have the opportunity to speak to these people, my hope is that it comes across because I really do feel like it's such a privilege and such an honor to be able to do this show and speak with these amazing people and have you guys listen and then write in and click like. And it's just nutty. It's just nutty. Sometimes I forget this isn't just an opportunity for me to sit in my studio and talk to these people. You guys are listening too, and it just makes it so much more special. So I even flirted with the idea of like, how do we keep going? How do we go on to episode 301? But this is just kind of a part of my life, and it's something that very much feeds my soul, and thus I keep going, and thus I keep going. And so Daniel Gray on this week's show, and what a treat. And I know that some of you are like, I didn't know what you guys were talking about. And that's okay, because that fed my soul as well, that we got to talk about some random stuff. I speak right now, I'm kind of filling time because I've been putting off recording this second half of the show, and this is not something I normally put off doing. But with Indiana, with all of the developments in Indiana, with the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, I've kind of felt a little bit reticent to how do I even attack this. I'll pull back the curtain a little bit. You know, what I'm trying to do with this show is provide the news, certainly, and I do have my own spin on it. But for something like this that has so invaded the public consciousness this week, I'm certainly not going to go back and tell you all, hey, this is what happened in Indiana, because I do have a baseline expectation that you guys are out there knowing some of this stuff. I try to highlight week in, week out stories that you might not have heard about and certainly touch on some highlights. But with something like Indiana, yeah, this has invaded our public consciousness and everybody knows. So they signed this law into Indiana and it's been really nutty. The response has been just crazy. Now, I am fascinated with how this all has come about. I am fascinated with Governor Pence of Indiana. I watched, did you guys watch the 13-minute interview with him and George Stephanopoulos? I have watched it so many times. And yes, there is the one side. I have a lot of friends and just people who listen to the show who posted on Facebook and said, hey, why didn't George Stephanopoulos just say, wait, we're not moving on until you answer these questions? Or why didn't he walk off? So there's definitely that. If you didn't see the interview again, YouTube it. I don't know that the title of the clip saying George Stephanopoulos grills Governor Mike Pence is the most accurate because I don't know that he grilled him, but it was kind of a masterclass in how you cannot answer questions, even when they are repeatedly asked on national TV. So if you didn't see it, I'll do a little bit of recapping. George kept asking Governor Pence, so if there is a florist, could they deny, under this Religious Freedom Restoration Act, could they deny services to the LGBT community? And Governor Pence refused to answer it. This is what's called being meticulously prepped, and I find it riveting. Right before he went on the interview, he was meticulously prepped. Someone sat down with him, probably a whole group of someone, that said, all right, you're going to get asked this question, but at each and every opportunity, pivot to Bill Clinton signed this into law 20 years ago, even though it was a totally different act, totally different thing that was signed into law 20 years ago when marriage equality was nowhere on the horizon, so we weren't protecting against that. It was something completely different. And mention Barack Obama as many times as you can. And if you feel cornered, say, stop cornering us people, us Hoosiers in Indiana. Stop cornering the Hoosiers. Stop mislabeling us. You're just subscribing to the hype. So George would ask the question again. And Governor Pence would pivot. No, no. Bill Clinton signed this into law 20 years ago. Barack Obama supported it when he was a state senator. And hey, you are misunderstanding our Hoosiers. We're the most welcoming people ever. So then towards the end of the interview, George Stephanopoulos just asked, okay, what about discrimination? Should it be legal to discriminate against LGBT people? And Governor Pence pivoted again. And again and again. And I don't know why I'm riveted by this. I think because I watched The West Wing for so many years. My own political background really just wasn't at this level. There weren't prepared statements. You just kind of said whatever you thought there in Brattleboro, Vermont. But on this national stage, you are prepped. And you are told, here are your talking points. And do not let them sway you. Just keep pivoting. And that's what happened. Now, I do agree. I think George should have maybe stopped. George, because I know him. We're on a first-name basis. I think maybe he should have stopped the interview at some point and said, okay, this is clearly not going anywhere. But the interview kept going on. So here are some different elements of the story that you might not know about, that you might not have heard about. Now, maybe unsurprisingly, certainly unsurprisingly to me and to most of you, all of the top Republicans, those who have indicated that they might be running for the presidential office in 2016, have come out in support of Governor Pence. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush not only claimed that Governor Pence has done the right thing, but also that, quote, we're going to need this kind of law. He said this in a radio interview this week. He said, quote, I think if they actually got briefed on the law, that they wouldn't be blasting this law. I think Governor Pence has done the right thing. Florida has a law like this. And then watch this. He said, says, Bill Clinton signed a law like this at the federal level. This is simply allowing people of faith space to be able to express their beliefs, to be able to be people of conscience. I just think once the facts are established, people aren't going to see this as discriminatory at all. So that's what Governor Jeb Bush said. I do not accept this argument at all. Legal scholars, Lambda Legal, people who study the law have looked at the law and said, yeah, no, this is a discriminatory law. So what is it that you think that we, the public, are not able to grasp? Say that me, Ken Schneck, and you, who's ever listening, that we're just lay people and we can't understand this law. Well, we're not the only ones interpreting it, folks. There are legal scholars everywhere who are publishing opinions that say, no, this is discriminatory. And I know that's Governor Pence's argument as well. Once you understand the law, you'll see it's about protecting freedoms and not discriminating. And as I said on last week's show, those two things are not mutually exclusive. You can be discriminating as you are saying we are protecting someone else's freedoms. They can happen at the same time. It's not either or. So that was Governor Jeb Bush. Texas Senator Ted Cruz, who is the only Republican who has formally announced a presidential campaign, he said that this is a fundraising. He's basically using it as a fundraising tool for him. He said, quote, I'm proud to stand with Governor Mike Pence, and I urge Americans to do the same. So that's what it said on his official campaign website. He said, quote, I want to commend Governor Mike Pence for his support of religious freedom, especially in the face of fierce opposition. There was a time, not too long ago, when defending religious liberty enjoyed strong bipartisan support. Alas, today we are facing a concerted assault on the First Amendment, on the right of every American to seek out and worship God according to the dictates of his or her conscience. Governor Pence is holding the line to protect religious liberty in the Hoosier state. Indiana is giving voice to millions of courageous conservatives across this country who are deeply concerned about the ongoing attacks upon personal liberties. I'm proud to stand with Mike, and I urge Americans to do the same. Now, here's the funniest thing about his statement. So, sorry. End quote. Now Ken's commentary. There was a time, he said, not too long ago when defending religious liberty enjoyed strong bipartisan support. Then a couple sentences later, he talks about how Indiana is giving voice to millions of courageous conservatives. So he just says right there, this is not a bipartisan issue anymore. And if that is indeed his stance, that this should be bipartisan, he perpetuates this by saying that religious freedom is only for conservatives, that those are the ones without a voice. So there's Texas Senator Ted Cruz, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, who he often flirts with being a presidential candidate and has been before and said he might run in 2016. He said, quote, we must stand behind those who stand up for religious freedoms. Indiana's law is the same that was supported and signed by President Bill Clinton and most Democrats back in 1993. Senator Barack Obama also supported it at one time. It's not a bill that discriminates but protects from religious discrimination and upholds religious liberty for everyone. End quote. Again, someone has said these are the two areas that we should pivot to. President Bill Clinton and most Democrats supported it in 1993, and Senator Barack Obama supported it at one time. This wasn't the bill that they supported. If you do any research, you can see this was not the bill that they supported. More Republicans speaking out. Florida Senator Marco Rubio, he addressed this on an episode of The Five on Fox News. He said, quote, nobody is saying that it should be legal to deny someone service at a restaurant or at a hotel because of their sexual orientation. I think that's a consensus view in America. The flip side is, should a photographer be punished for refusing to do a wedding that their faith teaches them is not one that is valid in the eyes of God? I think people have the right to live out their religious faith in their own lives. They can't impose it on you in your life, but they have a right to live it out in their own lives. And when you're asking someone who provides professional services to do something or be punished by law that violates their faith, you're violating that religious liberty that they have. That was Florida Senator Marco Rubio. And there were a ton of other quotes from all these other Republicans who may or may not be running for president in 2016, but regardless of them not being united in their stance of whether they come out and say they're running for president in 2016, they are united in their stance in their support of Governor Mike Pence, which I have to say maybe is a little bit surprising, given that this polling data is out there, that marriage equality is supported by a majority of Americans, you would think they would be softening their stance a bit. But I guess this is not opportunity for our Republican colleagues to say, yes, I can't come out against marriage equality, but I can come out for religious freedom. and that's kind of an end run. And then, yes, I'm for religious freedom, and that should trump everything. And then they don't have to make a statement about marriage equality. We're going to see these more and more and more, these stances, these really strong stances, as we get closer to the Supreme Court decision this summer. But that's not everything that's going on. This is kind of my stance on what's going on in Indiana and where I think that I can maybe add a voice. There are a lot of petitions out there. People are submitting petitions left to right, up and down, moveon.org petitions. All these other sites are submitting petitions for you to sign on and say, hey, I do not support Indiana's Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which I'm kind of ambivalent about. So one of the petitions out there is from ACPA, College Student Educators International, which is the other one of my professional organizations. So the two big professional organizations for my field of student affairs, some education for you all, are NASPA, the National Association of Student Personnel Administrators, and ACPA. That's the other organization. Well, ACPA has a petition out there, and they've been forwarding it around, and they have thousands of signatures on it. Let me tell you what it says. Here's what it says. Dear colleague, on the 26th of March, 2015, the governor of Indiana signed into law the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, one of several so-called religious liberty bills recently vetted by states. ACPA, College Student Educators International, views these bills in all of their forums and in all of the states and countries that produce them as overt acts of discrimination against LGBT people. We believe these bills are destructive to the well-being of our colleagues living and working in Indiana, as well as other communities throughout the United States and around the world. We protest passage of the law in Indiana and deeply object to its blatant disregard for human dignity. We join with hundreds of corporations and organizations in this protest. Pretty good, right? Like, this is good language. That's totally fine. They keep going. They say, we've been in direct contact with the Governor Mike Pence's office and the Speaker of the House, Brian Bosma, and Senate President David Long, stating our deep concern and request for repeal of this egregious law. We encourage each of you to call their office as well. We also invite you, now here's the call to action. So we're looking for a clarion call to action that would sway people. Here it is. We also invite you to sign this petition, which we will deliver to the governor. Our goal is for long-term, sustainable, positive, and inclusive change in accordance with our core values. Thank you, respectfully, and then all these signatures from people who are associated with ACPA, College Student Educators International. Here's the problem. And again, they have at this point a couple thousand signatures. It's not going to do anything. I am so over petitions at this point that don't have some sort of or else. So if I'm in Governor Mike Pence's office or Speaker of the House Brian Bosma or Senate President David Long and I get this petition from ACPA, College Student Educators International, first of all, I'm probably not going to know who ACPA is. And this isn't a slight on ACPA. If I have student affairs colleagues listening, I would think that if they got a petition from NASPA, they wouldn't know what that was either. You're getting a petition that says, we condemn this action. We request repeal of this egregious law. I would then discard your petition, particularly as your couple thousand signatures are coming from all over the country. I mean, I'm looking at the ones that are just showing up on the screen right now, and not one of them is from Indiana. So they are that much easier to dismiss. If you guys are going to do a petition, there has to be some sort of hook. There has to be some sort of or else. It can't just be, hey, we're against this. Because if you don't even live in the state where the law has passed, they're not going to take it very seriously. There's not a lot of investment there. That was just you clicking really quick. They're not counting on your votes. They're not worried about jeopardizing your votes. And of course, these politicians, they are very motivated by votes. They like getting elected. So you get this petition, a couple thousand signatures from all over the country. There's no or else. They're just condemning you. I just feel like this is not a good use of our efforts. On the flip side, the drama that's happening on the other side of the equation I mentioned last week, and that's with NASPA, my other professional organization, because their national conference next March is in Indianapolis. Well, needless to say, this has caused any number of conversations, and people are not sure which direction to go. There are listservs out there. There's a petition that calls for the president of NASPA to withdraw the conference from Indianapolis for next year. See, by the way, that's an or else, because people are signed up saying, hey, I'm not going to go to your conference if it's still in Indianapolis. That's an effective petition. But should NASPA withdraw its conference from Indianapolis? Should the Final Four not be in Indianapolis? Should the Indy 500 not be in Indianapolis? Should we withdraw all of these different events from Indiana? Now, the tricky part, as I'm sure many of you have heard, is that the mayor of Indianapolis, who is a Republican, has done everything that he can do to come out and say, hey, we are not for this Indiana law. We are not for discrimination. So he is trying to posit his city as being a place where these events can and should happen. But it's still taking place in a larger context of a state that has passed this Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So that's my little rant on petitions. If you're going to put a petition out there, and especially if you're going to have people signing from all over the country and not people from the actual state that the politicians in the state care about because they want your votes, then there needs to be some sort of or else. There needs to be some sort of or we're going to withdraw our business from you. Otherwise, they will get ignored. They will get ignored. In Arkansas, because this is the twin bill, Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson said his own son had signed a petition asking him not to sign his state's Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and as it turns out, he isn't signing it yet, at least not in its current form. Governor Hutchinson said this, quote, "My responsibility is to speak out on my own convictions to make sure this bill protects the values of the people of Arkansas, protects those of religious conscience, but also minimizes the chance of discrimination." He said this week at a press conference regarding the future of House Bill 1228. Although Governor Hutchinson had long pledged to sign the bill if it was sent to his desk, he changed his mind and explained why in a news conference held Wednesday morning. He said that the current version of the bill doesn't mirror the federal version of the law, signed in 1993 by President Clinton, got to pivot back to that, from which it gets its name, so he's asking lawmakers to make changes. He said this, quote, "This legislation is not about picking winners and losers. This legislation is about the right standards and the right balance, that courts can interpret that. What is important from Arkansas's standpoint is that we get the right balance and we make sure that we communicate that we are not going to be a state that fails to recognize the diversity of our workplace and our economy." Just so you all know, the Arkansas version of this law, like the Indiana one, goes much further and creates what activists call a, quote, "license to discriminate for individuals in disputes with each other," as opposed to, and this is what Bill Clinton signed, focusing solely on legal disputes with the government. Representative Bob Ballinger, the bill's sponsor, had claimed it identically mirrors the Religious Freedom Restoration Act that was signed federally, but Governor Hutchinson made it clear that he disagrees. The governor went on to say this, quote, "When you look at what's on my desk, it does not mirror the federal law, and that's what I would prefer, and that's what I've asked lawmakers to do." So that's what's going on in Arkansas. That will be the next state. It wouldn't have been that long ago that I thought, oh, Arkansas, I'm never going there. But then I just got an assignment. I'm on one of these teams that goes around to different colleges and works on their reaccreditation. And I just got my first assignment since moving to Ohio. And I'm on a team that's headed to rural Arkansas in November. I don't want to head to a state that has one of these laws on the books. So certainly going to be keeping my eyes on Arkansas. There is other news out there. There is an amazing, amazing letter that is making its waves, and I'm just going to read a little bit of it. It's over on The Advocate. It's called "An Open Letter from a Transgender Rabbi to Trans Teens Everywhere." Last week, the story of Tom Chai Sosnick, a teenager who came out as transgender at Tahiya Day School, his Jewish day school, made headlines. Inspired by Tom's courage and the need to support transgender and gender-expansive teenagers everywhere, Rabbi Becky Silverstein penned an open letter to Tom and teenagers like him, which Jewish LGBT rights advocacy group Keshet, who we've had their executive director on the show, they proudly shared on Transgender Day of Visibility this week. The letter reads in part, I love this. You guys have to go check out the full thing, but I'm going to read a little bit. "Dear Tom," this is from this rabbi. This is from Rabbi Becky Silverstein, open letter. "Dear Tom, as I was preparing my sermon last Friday afternoon, I decided to take a quick Facebook break and saw the video of you addressing your school. I watched it and immediately shared it with my own social network, commenting that while I don't know this young man, I have the privilege of knowing others who share a similar story. Almost nothing in the world could make me smile wider than this. Tom, we have never and may never meet, and yet I feel as though I know you. I see in your face the faces of LGBTQ Jewish teenagers I've had the opportunity to work with in my time time as Jewish educator and rabbi. In your face, I also see a vision of what I want so badly for our Jewish community to be, a place where everyone can be celebrated for the entirety of who they are and where nobody feels the need to hide a piece of their identity. Tom, in your face, I saw the reason why I am out, why I share my story, why I work to make our communities more inclusive. Tom, your courage gave me courage. This week we will celebrate Passover. In his Torah study this past Shabbat, my colleague and teacher, Rabbi Joshua Levine Grader, remarked that Passover is not for the risk-averse. The moments before and during the actual exodus from Egypt were extremely risky. How could the individual Israelites be sure that they would be redeemed? And yet, in order for our story to continue, each individual needed to take a risk, needed to take a leap of faith and perform the Passover sacrifice. Tom, at the heart of our communal narrative is the courageous action of individuals taking a risk. In sharing your transition with your parents, community school, and the greater world community, you modeled for all of us what it means to feel as though we ourselves were leaving Egypt, a central commandment within the Passover Haggadah, which is the prayer book for Passover for all of you. And there's more. There's shout-outs to his family, to his school principal, to his rabbi, to his classmates, and then finally to Tom. It's a beautiful, beautiful letter. It's from Rabbi Becky Silverstein. You can find it. Just Google an open letter from a transgender rabbi to trans teens everywhere. Please, please go check it out. It's quite lovely. It's quite lovely. There is one more story out there that excites me, and only because Daniel Gray and I mentioned it, or I mentioned it to Daniel Gray about Arrow and Flash, which I love so much. Well, they were all on a panel this week. All of the actors were on a panel, and they shouted out the need for the portrayal of a gay superhero on TV. Flash, which is about the Flash, the DC superhero, actually has a lot of LGBT content on there, but not yet an LGBT hero. And so to hear these actors and the show's creators do a shout out and say, hey, we really, it's time for an LGBT superhero on TV. So very exciting, and I hope it happens because I watch these shows. This is what apparently I have time to do. I know you guys have time to do other things too. My hope is that you are using your time to make a difference in this world, to use your voice to create a petition with a hook that has an or else that lets other people know, hey, I'm against what you're doing, but here's what's going to happen. Here are some consequences if you don't make some changes, because that will get people's attention. Pen a letter to the editor. Use your voice. This is a week where everybody's trying to figure out, holy cow, there's a whole state that is saying they might refuse me service. So how can I use my voice? And people are doing really creative things, and I encourage you to do the same thing. Use your voice to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. Get out there and do it. And please remember, while you're out there making a difference and using your voice, why be gay when you can be so gay?